Okay, I think we've got a new conservation chairman, since Mr. Montgomery just didn't have time.
Yeah, what happens if you don't show up, you're out.
Bonus pay goes to...
And the bonus pay, make a note of that, he's not going to be getting that anymore, so... That's right, our new conservation chair, Mark Bivens, couldn't do it any earlier because he wasn't confirmed.
Right. Congratulations.
Congratulations. Well done. You have the gavel. I don't know, is he ready for a gavel? What do y'all think?
I think he's ready.
Okay.
He can answer those questions.
Okay. Everybody have their prepared questions I gave to the chairman of conservation.
There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The Conservation Committee first order of business is approval of the prior minutes. I'll entertain a motion.
Second.
That's moved by Friedman, seconded by Brown. All those in favor, say
aye. Aye.
All opposed, same sign. Thank you very much. The committee item number one, land and water plan update.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've had Dr. McKinnon and his staff and I have had some interesting discussions over the last few months and exchange of correspondence with the U.S. Department of Transportation Maritime Administration Agency, known as MARAD, regarding hull cleaning of ships in Texas waters. And to just summarize it, ships from all around the nation, one of the destinations for them when they are to be scrapped is the shipyards in Texas, primarily. I believe the Brownsville shipyard is one of the primary destinations for those ships. We have been concerned about potential invasive species issues if ships are brought into Texas waters without proper hull cleaning prior to entering the Gulf of Mexico. And just to cut to the chase, we got into one where there were ships coming from California, for example, that the California rules and regulations would not allow them to clean those hulls in California, so they were just going to send them to Texas to be cleaned in Texas. We got into a big discussion with them. Doc stepped right in and with it, and we took a pretty good stand with them, and yet at the same time recognizing that it is a big industry. It's a huge business. Thought we had a deal worked out where they would clean them in the Panama Canal, and went through a whole series of discussions with them on that. But MARAD has agreed to continue to talk with us concerning the movement of these decommissioned ships for recycling. At the present time, they have stopped all movement until alternative solutions to the concerns have been discussed and hopefully agreed upon. It's a big issue, and it's one that we want to deal with very carefully, and quite frankly, it's one that I believe Texas is in the lead on, and that I hope we will get something positive done for everyone involved. On another item, in 2005, Coastal Fisheries launched a program designed to recruit experienced anglers to assist TPWD in collecting rootstock for our hatchery programs. This program has helped TPWD avoid inbreeding in the hatchery breeding program. Tournaments around the state have been organized. Fish collected from these tournaments will be used to produce fingerlings, which will be returned to the same bay system from which the broodfish originated. The department, as I believe all of you know, collaborated with the Professional Angler Association, Toyota, and a number of other commercial entities to hold the first ever professional angler tournament on Lake Fork, one of the country's finest bass fisheries. More than 27,000 folks attended the tournament, and the department received a donation of $250,000 for conservation education in support of inland fisheries. Finally, the 52nd Texas Game Warden Academy graduated on May the 18th. We had a ceremony down at the Capitol, had a great turnout. I think the room holds like 400, and I believe it was within 95% of being packed full. Our academy class was composed of 24 cadets, of which two were from the nation of Mexico that attended and paid their way through our academy and had a great relationship there, and one that we think might grow.
We've got a really good bunch of young folks out of the academy, into the field, and providing services to people in Texas. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Cook. The item number two, private range advisory board report, Linda Campbell and Steve Wood.
Scott, can we get another chair? I think we're going to have Dr. Eichenhorst join him also. And Gene doesn't need that. He's always jumping up and down.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. My name is Linda Campbell, and I'm the Program Director for the Private Lands and Public Hunting Program. Here with me is Steve Lewis, to my right.
Good morning.
He is the Chairman of the Private Lands Advisory Board, and also Dr. Eichenhorst, who is a member of the board. Today we'd like to brief you on the board's recommendations to the Commission and TPWD concerning the technical assistance for landowners, and specifically with regard to the managed land program. First, I would like to provide you information on the Private Lands Advisory Board and the charge that Chairman Fitzsimmons asked them to look at. As a reminder to you, the board, the objective is to advise Texas Parks and Wildlife Department on matters pertaining to wildlife programs, management, and research on private lands. And as you can see there, there's a list of the current members of the board. Chairman Fitzsimmons' charge to the board was to develop guidance on how to keep the managed land program credible and effective, and to develop recommendations concerning Parks and Wildlife's ability to provide a high level of technical assistance to landowners. The charge was delivered to this board in August of 2006. I would like to now provide you a little bit of background information that was provided to the board to assist them in developing their recommendations. First, several permits are offered by the department that require the landowner to have a TPWD-approved wildlife management plan. The number of permits issued during the 2006 permit year is as follows here on the slide. About 160,000, nearly 161,000 on 10 million acres for the managed land deer program. 75 triple T permits and the antlerless spike deer control permits of 25. The Parks and Wildlife 2005 Land and Water Resources Conservation and Recreation Plan Goal 3.4 states increase acres under wildlife management plan to 20 million acres by 2008. Currently, there are 5,205 department-approved wildlife management plans covering over 19.3 million acres in Texas. About half of all wildlife management plans developed with Parks and Wildlife Assistance are associated with the managed land deer permit program. Technical guidance biologists are the ones primarily responsible for providing technical assistance to landowners by recommending management practices to assist the landowners in meeting their wildlife management goals. Currently, there are 10 technical guidance biologists and 10 private land biologists in the field working in Texas. The difference, generally private lands biologists are younger with less time in service compared with technical guidance biologists. In-house surveys show these biologists average about 80% or more of their time providing technical assistance to landowners. In addition to the technical guidance and private lands biologists, all regulatory biologists and technicians also provide significant technical guidance assistance to landowners. In 2005, 39% of all Wildlife Division staff time was spent on providing information and technical assistance to landowners. The board considered the following challenges for the department as they prepared their recommendations. First, the department will meet or exceed its goal of 20 million acres under management plan by 2008. The inclusion of the managed land deer program for mule deer is expected to increase the demand for MLDPs in West Texas. Increasing the number of new landowners and increasing the number of new landowners purchasing land for recreational purposes is growing dramatically, and it would be expected to increase the services requested for the managed land program. Landowners enjoy the benefits of these programs and are certainly needing them. The department needs to be ready for additional demands and delivering the technical guidance associated with these managed lands programs. And finally, TPWD needs enough boots on the ground to meet the growing demand to keep the managed lands programs credible and effective. Now I'd like to turn it over to Steve Lewis to present the board's recommendation.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you, Joseph. It's been a pleasure to serve as chairman of the Private Lands Advisory Board. We have an active board. Attendance was good. Interest was good. We've met several times in the last year and a half. It's been our pleasure to serve, and I appreciate it. Commissioner Holt knows better to go to Utah or Phoenix without Tim Duncan. And I've decided that I'm not coming to Austin without Bill Eichenhorst. Bill has given me an enormous, he's had my right arm in this committee. He's gone above and beyond my wildest expectation. He thinks about natural resources 24 hours a day. And so I asked him to join me today, and I greatly appreciate his extra effort in helping me. Thank you. Plan's recommendations, the first one is on the current slide, and Plan recommends against charging a fee for managed lands program. This was the first order of business. Lively discussion we've had regarding this issue, but at the end of the day, due to the variability of the appropriation process, TPWD cannot assure landowners that fees associated with participation in the managed land program would be used to provide additional services for participants. The only entity that can dedicate those funds is the legislature, and the more I learn, the more I know that TPWD just cannot guarantee that. The department is not in a position to guarantee landowners their fee, but that their fee would be plowed back into the managed land program. Given the recent problems with Fund 9, Plan was not comfortable with this requirement of a fee, and that was nearly unanimous. Second recommendation, and basically our charge from Chairman Fitzsimmons was this program is growing. 20 million by 08, you're going to make it. I think you're going to surpass it. West Texas is going to blow past 20 million acres. So there's a demand for it. How do you keep it credible? You know, how do you prove that it's for real and it works? Platt recommends that well-defined benchmarks measured, and I'm going to use the word measured frequently, measured and reported annually are necessary to ensure the credibility of managed lands programs. The following annual, here again, measurement are recommended. We go to benchmarks for managed land participants. Review of landowners' stated goals and planned actions as identified in their wildlife management plan. Remember, WMPs are designed to achieve the landowner's goals. That's who's important in this game. The percent or extent of the planned action achieved for habitat improvement, including fire, brush management, planned grazing, or whatever management tool they're using, let's figure out how much that tool how far it went in attaining their goals, reason why it was achieved or not. Again, measure. Percent of recommendation of harvest achieved. Landowner self-assessment of progress toward their goals. And this is interesting, including efforts to provide hunting opportunity, youth, underserved populations, and education outreach community programs. Platt feels that your cooperators in the managed land area are going to be your real stars of this extracurricular effort, if you will, about who's holding field days, who's providing youth hunting, who's going above and beyond, who's going outside of their fences to provide something valuable for Texas recreation, conservation, outreach, etc. Again, if you'll measure what's going on in the ranch and provide some self-assessment by the landowners to toot their own horn, if you will, about their activities, I think it's important. And then finally, TPWD biologists' assessment of the good faith efforts by landowners to implement and maintain management practices toward achievement of the stated goals. Another recommendation, benchmarks for managed land participants. One of the goals of this process is to use the information as a proactive tool to document habitat improvement, as well as economic and societal benefits associated with better land management. Properly designated and used, this process will provide TPWD with an ongoing evaluation that documents the landowner's habitat management efforts, recognize habitat improvement through various quantifiable management practices, and recognizes the extra efforts of the permit holders. Platt believes you will find tremendous extra effort by these permit holders. An additional recommendation is to develop an integrated database to gather and manage data related to managed land programs and other activities of the Wildlife Division. Use this database to streamline landowner assistance and allow field, program, and management staff instant access to information needed to evaluate and document the benefits of the managed land program. Allow selected access for landowner and staff at various levels to provide information for decision making while maintaining privacy for cooperating landowners. Platt believes an integrated data management system of this type is a good investment for TPWD and is long overdue. And as a sidebar, this TG effort is a great deal of getting along with landowners and coffee table talk, if you will. To me, it's being able to on the way out of that ranch, pull under a live oak tree and enter into a computer what happened that day. Store it and share it with those who need to know is just an awful lot better system than going to a yellow pad, putting it in one department who may not get it in another. Let's get on the same page. We saw a really interesting, fascinating program called TWIMS, presented by Dr. Liu. It clapped just, our jaws were
Steve, explain the acronym and what exactly.
TWIMS is an acronym for Texas Wildlife Information Systems. And it was one of your consultants or programmers' first attempt to create a program to bring all this data together and share it between the various department members. It was fascinating, tremendous. I understand there's some statewide mandates to consolidate IT capabilities. We're in all statewide agencies use a coordinated effort. I'm not sure that if that can happen, that's great. But it seems to me y'all were way down the road with what I saw of Dr. Liu's efforts.
Right. So if I understand, we have to find a way to make TWIMS survive this integration.
Yeah.
It was an amazing presentation. I enjoyed it very much. This, the next slide regarding recruitment, training, and career advancement, I'm going to let Dr. Bill Eichenhorst discuss this.
Thanks, Steve. Good morning, Chairman Fitzsimmons, Commissioners. It was an honor to be here. I think I'm Steve's right-hand man on changing the slide deal, but I'm Dr. Bill Eichenhorst, Private Management Advisory Board member for the record. Steve talked about the high-tech parts of this, and what I'm going to talk about is the high-touch part of it, because people really drive this, as you know. We talked about boots on the ground. No question that without boots on the ground, this ability to measure, this ability to transfer this information doesn't happen. Really, I translate boots on the ground to conservation and wildlife management action on the ground. The quantity of boots is important. The quality and effectiveness of those boots is imperative. And great tech guides people are practitioners. I'm a veterinarian. And practitioning is an experience. There's an art and a science, and it's compromised frequently between art and science. Experience allows you to be able to take those the art that you gained over time through experience and the science and combine them in a superlative way to create that information transfer that's imperative for this to happen. To magnify the total wildlife management and conservation action of all the tech guidance people, what we're talking about is creating additional positions to provide assistance to landowners where the demand is the greatest, not necessarily by region or reporting unit or by some compartment with lines on that, but by demand, because it is not exactly spread out either way. And obviously to continue to include landowner assistance as a job duty for all biologists and technicians, and combining the high-tech ability to maximize those practitioners' ability, whatever level they are, is imperative. But we're also recommending the creation or the facilitation of maybe a new level of tech guidance leader role, because if we're going to, I think it's imperative that we emphasize tech guidance to be able to achieve the charge, and to do that, having those people staying in the field that are best in the field and being able to mentor and guide and train and help create that platform for the new tech guidance people at whatever level they are, we feel is imperative. That would allow all, a rising tide floats all ships, and that would allow all tech guidance with limited resources, limited FDEs, and all the things that you face, y'all have to figure out how to do that, but that was our unanimous recommendation, and I'd be available to answer any questions if I didn't do a good job of explaining that to you.
I have one question. Our tech guidance, should that number increase at all in the last few years from something like 10? Now we're at 20 million acres under WNP, so that number change?
Commissioner, I believe the last time it was increased was the year 2000, and that's when the private lands biologists came on. But the TGs have been the same as 10 for quite some time.
Question. You know, with West Texas coming online and that continues to grow, what is the, first of all, how many permits have been issued for the West Texas region, and what is, over the next 5 years, for example, what is the projected acreage that we're going to be adding?
I would like
to Mike Bird, Director of the Wildlife Division. Through last year, the new mule deer managed land program had about just under 3 million acres enrolled, and we would anticipate over the next few years at least another 1.5 million. Most of that's in Transpace, a little bit in Transpace. I can't tell you offhand the number of branches that is, but about 3 million acres.
Significant additional acres coming online.
Almost 1 million acres a year since we passed the reg. We'll be close to 5 million at 5 years. Let's let them run through their conclusions and all that, and then I think we'll have a broad discussion over all these issues and their conclusions.
Okay, the conclusions is that the managed land program has been an unqualified success and has had a major positive impact on the white-tailed deer and other wildlife habitat. The number of field biologists needs to be increased, preferably through all new hires, but also through reassignment of existing TPWD personnel during key months when workload is greatest. And PLAB recommends that TPWD utilize an integrated data management system to facilitate information flow between field biologists and landowners. TPWD should designate staff to gather and maintain data on the benefits of managed land programs, including not only the benefits of effective habitat and game management, but also on the economic value to rural communities resulting from increased recreational opportunity. Working effectively with landowners requires a certain skill set based in understanding and motivating people. Thus, it is critical that TPWD retain and develop those individuals with exceptional skills in this area. A career ladder that encourages biologists with exceptional TG skills to remain in the field is recommended. TPWD should continue to communicate that the managed land programs are habitat-based incentive programs benefiting all species of wildlife, both game and non-game species, in all regions of the state of Texas. And those are our recommendations, Mr. Chairman.
Steve and Bill, I want to thank you. And of course, Linda, you had to direct all this effort. But I want to thank you all for your hard work. You spent a lot of time on it. I met with you once or twice, and I think you realized that there was a lot to the charge, and you didn't run from it. You didn't take the easy way out, and I appreciate you staying focused on the charge. It's easy in this business to go down some other trails, and you didn't do that. Let me ask you a couple of questions on the final recommendation.
Yes, sir.
Where do we go with that? I mean, you're saying there are a lot of nice broad terms there, habitat, all species, the whole state. I take away from this 50% of the real programs are tied to the managed lands deer permit. We still seem to be tied to single species management in some respect. Even though we say nice words about game, non-game, we're still talking about deer. So where do we go from? How do we make that a reality and get to multi-species?
Well, obviously, it's kind of wildlife management 101. That's the vortex that you're in. You know, if you're focusing management on an individual species, which is how this program started, obviously needing to know the population of deer, and that there's going to be that focus. I think it's a challenge that we just have to try to figure that out. It probably requires some more discussion among the smart folks that sit around tables like this to get that bridge, that transformation of conversion of how does this really affect that. I think to some extent, Chairman Fitzsimmons, the answer's in there, the measurement. I think as we begin to create those flexible measurement tools, social, economic, and biologic, ecological measurement tools, we'll begin to see and be able to document some of those impacts that go beyond a single species. I don't know that I have a profound single answer, but I think it's a thing.
It seems to me that if we're really going to get to the root of habitat management, we're going to have to look at a more holistic model of multiple species management, of managing the habitat as a whole. And there's not just drawing people here because they're interested in deer.
There's no reason why somebody interested in turtles or turkeys or whatever can't be interested in this.
It seems to me that as this concept matures, the application to other species will be somewhat self-fulfilling because the techniques that you're utilizing for a particular species more than likely will benefit others as well. And so I think you're going to see increasing numbers and not necessarily the specified species of the plant, but I think that the holistic approach will be somewhat self-fulfilling. I don't know that it will be able to necessarily measure with any accuracy, but I think that you're going to see an overall improvement in habitat, which is a better form, increase in the other species. I also have another question. The background page states that about half of all WPs developed are done so with TPWD assistance. Who does the other half?
Well, actually, the intent of that was about half of all wildlife management plans result as a result of the managed land program. In other words, that's what I meant.
Well, I was just interested to know if there were other entities out there that were participating in this on an increased level that I wasn't aware of that we were talking about.
I do want to add, Mr. Chairman, too, that the Pride Lands Advisory Board is meeting today from 1 to 3, and your question, Chairman Fitzsimmons, is number one on their agenda to discuss.
That's right. Chairman, I think the drive, the enthusiasm, all this starts with some landowner's enthusiasm.
Right.
And I think your question is very interesting in that, if I'm enthusiastic about something other than white-tailed deer, why can't I get the juices going and request help on that item? And I'm all for that.
And we might need some help here from Mike and Bright. We always need your lawyer. What action steps, can we break this down, and maybe I'm asking the staff to break this down into how much of this is management for the issues to the executive director on the issue of allocating resources of people in different times of the year, which I think you make a really good point, and the workload's there. You need those folks. And how much of it might take commission action, break those policy matters down, because it all, and then, of course, the other issue you bring up, which is the first one, you don't recommend a fee because we can't guarantee that the money's going to go where it's intended. I mean, it's the lesson we learned with the freshwater fisheries stamp. I think you're just being brutally frank. But if we could just break those recommendations down as to what we can, where we can take action, and then what kind of action.
Chairman Fitzsimmons, if you allow me a brief follow-up point on the multi-species impact, I really think that the high-touch, high-tech, the ability to share that technology, that information across to non-game people within the department and whatever will probably enable that self-fulfilling pathway that you described in a superlative way. Because now, much of that information is trapped and has to be asked for or sought out individually, where it may become available, and certainly they would then gain access, non-gaming folks, mm-hmm. to those cooperators in a way they may not even know exists now. So I think that's another aspect.
And that's an important point. I think, you know, we lack a lot of experience and data and sharing of information to build the biological foundation for those multi-species plans, where we've got reams of data on deer that have been focused on. Well, you know, I always talk about Claudia Ball. She's done an amazing job out there on the Devil's River, and she always asks me, why can't I have a managed lands program for turkey hunting? And she knows a lot about the turkey on that pecan bottom and those tributaries of the Devil's River. Get somebody involved in a program and start sharing that data, then we need to build the database so that we can make responsible decisions on the plan.
Exactly. For example, what's the microhabitat of arthropod abundance in those habitats, and then begin to come across the, you know, lift and all the other different aspects of putting that conservation wildlife management action on
the plan. And the beauty to me of that is then the neighbors get interested.
Right.
I mean, we're seeing that in West Texas. You know, everybody's starting to share information. The neighbors get interested. And that's when landscape scale conservation starts to happen.
Commissioner Parker, did you have a question?
carrying your, this is a wonderful presentation that you're, that I totally agree with, but I would think that for myself personally, and not looking, speaking for a lot of people beyond landowners, but how do you perceive, how does this all relate to an increased user participation beyond private landowners? And I directly relate all of this to somewhat of a flat history of hunting licenses and hunter participation. How does this relate to drawing the metropolitan citizen out and to experience the good work of that has been done on the private landowner's property? Well, you and I realize that might be a tough challenge, but I think it is one that needs to be addressed.
Managed land permits are designed to increase habitat. If there's better habitat to enjoy by those who live in the city for either as a guest or a lease fee or trespass fee, it's increasing the quality of what's out there. It's hard for somebody not connected with land to control the habitat unless he has a long-term lease and permission of the landowner. But it, to me, it's just providing better quality habitat to enjoy, either as a guest or as a lessee.
Hey, can I get you guys to address the SWIMS issue and how it survives integration? I may be biting off too much for this discussion, but it sounds like something I'd like the staff to come back and explain to us, because what these folks on the ground that are really doing the management are telling us is they were really impressed by the capability of SWIMS. I didn't even know it existed until they brought it to my attention, and it seems that it might be threatened by other issues. So we need to find a way to
get some background information on that.
You bet.
Developed it on the house.
Yep. When did we start, Mike? 15 years ago?
Yes.
Yep.
It's been a while.
It's a very, very complex set of information. The mapping involved, the availability of information is continuing to increase and improve. Keeping that information and honoring the privacy of this information, folks, is a real issue that we got to deal with here. That's one that we cross routinely from the agency standpoint. But the TWINS program, the TWINS program, whatever we call it, has been one that has been in development a good while. I think it'd be worth it'd be something that you would enjoy seeing and knowing about. I want to say that I appreciate these guys. I've known these folks a long time, been associated with this committee a long time, and add just a few words here. Our technical guidance program is over 30 years. We have had a technical guidance program at Texas Parks and Wildlife Department for over 30 years. It's a good program. I know these gentlemen, and I submit to you, if they looked at almost any of our other programs, whether that is freshwater fisheries, saltwater fisheries, our data systems, our financial systems, that they would probably walk away with the same kind of recommendations. So it's a matter of allocation of resources. When I look at technical guidance, people out there, and we have made great strides over the last 10 or 15 years in this program, as you know. You go back to the managed lands program, the managed land permit program, the real word that we heard from day one
for this chairman, the previous chairman, and the commission was habitat. Now, oftentimes, as we all know, it is white-tailed deer that gets our guy to the door. It is. But in recent years, we are seeing that evolution where maybe it's blackland prairie that person is interested in. Maybe it's endangered species or a species that is, it is on the Canada list, for example, the lesser prairie
canary. Well, the chairman's pet.
Is one of those things. But there's much more variety in the people who come to us now and say, here y'all got a program that helps landowners work with habitat, with different species, songbird prairies. So we're seeing that shift, and yet when it comes time to pay the bill, the revenue stream is a single source. So from the standpoint of, going back to the chairman's question, what can we do? Whose charge does it lay in? To develop a completely different revenue source or an additional revenue source, that would take commission and legislative action. That would be a legislative agenda priority. Wishing to develop a completely new revenue stream. For instance, and I hope that everyone here today will be able to come to our Land Steward Awards program tonight. Again, a program right out of this committee, right out of this group of folks that we're talking about. Great program. And you'll hear it. Some of those folks are being recognized because, and part of their program involves better quality, better quantity water, better supplementing the aquifer that their land is associated with or the city close by. That's part of the program now. So there's other issues that are bringing these folks to the table. Currently, we're set up, we can allocate the revenue stream that we have differently. As you heard Mrs. Field report, it's right now it's a relatively stable revenue stream. We go through very, very careful and serious considerations and looking at all of our programs, not just within the wildlife division, but between all of the fund nine divisions and allocating those resources. And I think we've got great programs at all. I think you all would agree with that. To generate additional revenue in that stream simply requires an increase in fees. And I say simply, rather casually. But the people participating in that are the same people who hunt and fish. So it is a complex issue. It is one that when we start looking at salaries of this group compared to salaries of that group, whether they be fisheries biologists or accountants or game wardens or whoever they may be, that we have to look at those responsibilities, performance levels, success of the program, and try to balance within the agency those kinds of issues. So it's as far as should we pay more? Absolutely. All of them deserve. They've done a great job. Can we allocate more resources in this direction? Probably as our we've done some things, for instance, in our data collection system just within the wildlife division that may allow us to, you know, continue to shift some resources and time and people this way. I kind of almost giggled when Doc and Steve were talking about to keep these guys in the field. You can't get these guys out
of the field.
That's because they love it. And they do a good job, and that's true again in all of these resource divisions. We don't have much trouble keeping these guys in the field, and our tenure, our longevity in these groups of people is excellent. I mean, we don't have people, turnover.
Well, I think the commission would like to see staff pull together what it would take to implement
these recommendations and then decide if it's feasible or even in our power to do it. Thanks for all you're doing, and thanks especially for the what we'll see tonight. I know it's a lot of work to pull together Lone Star Land Surgery Ward, and it's a great program.
Thank you. Appreciate the sermon.
Thank you all.
Steve, thank you.
Thank you. Item number 3, lease exchange for U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Cameron Hidalgo in Star County. And Mr. Ted Hollingsworth, who has been doing this today.
Chairman, Commissioners, good morning. My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This is an item that you're seeing for the third time regarding rearranging some of our small pieces of property that comprise the Las Palomas Wildlife Management Unit in the Lower Valley. After several years of discussions with U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, we've determined that some of those sites would be better managed by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. They were acquired originally with white wing money. At a time when we felt that the white-winged dove needed some habitat assistance in Texas. As we all know, the white-winged has done very well. And the cost of managing those small tracts of land for white-winged habitat now probably exceeds the biological value. And again, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is right there with the Lower Rio Grande Valley Refuge and can manage those tracts. In exchange, we would get a management agreement on tracts adjacent to two of the world birding centers. You've seen these maps before. The units in red would go to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The two units in yellow would come to Texas Parks and Wildlife. This would all occur under 50-year management agreements. The proposals will be published locally. We solicited public comment. I've gotten one email. We had no one show up for the local hearing. Our assumption is that there's not a lot of opposition to this locally. If you're in agreement, this is the recommendation you will see tomorrow to complete that transaction. Are there any questions?
Very well. Thank you very much. If there are no further questions or discussion, I'll take this item on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment. Committee item number 4, land sale, Travis County, Austin Game Warden Academy property.
Commissioner, my name is Ted Hollingsworth with the Land Conservation Program. This item you are also seeing for the third time. It involves the sale of 4.2 acres that we own on 50th Street in Austin. It is the location of the Austin Game Warden Academy. As you know, we are in the process of relocating the academy to a site in Hamilton County, which will give us more elbow room and better facilities for trained game wardens. Per your authorization in the April meeting, the property has been listed with a broker by the General Land Office. We have an offer in hand that we believe is in the best interest of the department to proceed with. Public hearings have been conducted on this site as well. We have requested authority to spend all funds realized from the sale on the facility in Hamilton County. And tomorrow you will see the following motion allowing the executive director to proceed with finalizing that contract and closing on that deal. If this particular transaction should fall through for whatever reason, we have a couple of other proposals in the wings that are also very solid, very good proposals, and we advise are in the best interest of the agency to proceed with.
Bob, I have a question on our ability to spend the total amount of proceeds. Has that been resolved?
Yes, we have authority, legislative authority, to whatever proceeds we get from this sale to transfer to and use at the Hamilton County facility.
No appraisal limitations or anything like that?
No.
All right. Any other discussion on this issue? Hearing none, I will place this item on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Item number five, transfer of property in Wood County, the Governor Hogg Shrine State Historic Site.
My name is Ted Hollingsworth. I'm with the Land Conservation Program. This is the second reading of this item. The Governor Hogg Shrine State Historic Site was transferred. The land was actually transferred to the City of Quitman several years ago. Two buildings on the site, which have some minor historic significance, were retained by this agency because the City of Quitman was not in a position to maintain those. The local Heritage Society has requested that we transfer those to them for repair and opening back up to the public. The City of Quitman is in favor of us doing so. To do so is fully consistent with our resource, land and water resource conservation and recreation plan. We have conducted public hearings and solicited public comment. Our recommendation to you is that we proceed with that transfer, and accordingly, this is the action item you will see tomorrow. Are you happy to answer any questions?
Any comments or questions regarding item number five? If there are none, I'll place this item on the Thursday Commission meeting for public comment and action. Thank you, Ted. Item number six, Eastman Foundation, Van Zandt County, Curtis Creek State Park.
Good morning, to the record. My name is Corky Coleman with the Land Conservation Program. This involves a road easement donation of Curtis Creek State Park. This easement will give us access to the northwest corner of the park. We currently are using this roadway by handshake agreement. Adjacent landowner is going to sell the property, and before he does, he's willing to donate a permanent recorded easement. It's going to help. They're planning a trail system to go completely around the lake. It'll help with that trail system for evacuation, emergency needs, whatever. And this is a recommendation you'll see tomorrow for that donation.
Any discussion of this item? How far is this from Lake Fork?
Curtis Creek is only about,
just curious. If there is no further discussion, I'll place this item on the Thursday Commission meeting agenda for public comment and action. Committee item number seven, land donation, Gonzales County, Palmetto State Park, permission to begin public notice and input process.
Again, Corky Coleman with the Land Conservation Program. This item represents the donation to Palmetto State Park. It's a 1.35 acre donation. The track that's going to be donated is adjacent to the park. If you see the red track, that's the donation track. The smaller red rectangle to the north, northeast is the park superintendent's house, the track that he currently resides on. The landowner, this is a picture of the area that's to be donated, and the landowner is going to reserve a life estate after the donation. And with your approval, we'll publish public notice and anticipate commission action once we go to the meeting. Any questions?
Any comments or questions on item 7? Hearing none, I will add that to the public notice and the process. On the next item, is our timing session.
I would suggest that we recess this committee and take up the next committee
Very well.
And proceed until we go to lunch, and we'll go into executive session as well.